We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Public Media Newscast is coming up at 4:30. I'm Jim Meadows.
This weather forecast is made possible with support from the University of Illinois Employees Credit Union, a member-owned and not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to serve the complete financial needs of its members. The University of Illinois Employees Credit Union. Information is available on the web at uiecu.org.
It's 12:38. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Kyle Mabry. Well, the Champaign-Urbana area and other areas of central and northern Illinois are seeing some rain, much needed here in the Urbana-Champaign area. An upper-level disturbance is tracking across the Midwest today, bringing scattered showers and thunderstorms to Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Strong to severe storms are also possible, especially across northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin into the evening hours. Thunderstorm chances will continue tomorrow as well when a cold front will track southeast across the region. High temperatures today will range from the upper 70s across northern Wisconsin to the mid-90s across west central Missouri. Overnight low temperatures will range from the upper 60s across northern Wisconsin to the mid-70s across southwestern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, scattered showers and thunderstorms, the high 85, the wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Look for a low of 67 and a south wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny and hot with another chance of showers and thunderstorms. We'll see a high in the low 90s. The wind will be from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a chance of evening showers and thunderstorms. The low 64. The wind will be out of the northwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny with a high of 83. The wind from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night through Friday night, mostly clear with lows in the low 60s and the high Friday in the mid 80s. Saturday and Sunday, partly cloudy with the high Saturday in the upper 80s and the low Saturday night in the mid 60s. At noon central time across Illinois and Indiana, temperatures ranged from the mid 60s to the upper 80s. And there were a variety of weather conditions. At noon, Rockford reported light rain and 67 degrees. There was a thunderstorm at O'Hare, 66 degrees there at the top of the hour. Cloudy and 68 at Bloomington. Mattoon reported a partly sunny sky and 82 degrees, and it was sunny in Carbondale, where 87 degrees was recorded. At South Bend, cloudy and 79. Lafayette, cloudy and 81. Indianapolis, partly sunny and 84. Evansville reported a sunny sky and 86 degrees. Terre Haute didn't report at the top of the hour. At noon, Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky, 80 degrees. The dew point, 61. The relative humidity, 52%. The wind out of the south at 8. The barometric pressure, 29.99 and steady. And at 12:41, 72 degrees in Urbana, and it is raining. Lawmakers and political groups often decry what they say is wasteful spending, wasteful government spending. One popular target, scientific studies.
Things like fruit fly research in Paris, France.
$3 million to study the DNA of bears in Montana.
And $140 million for something called volcano monitoring.
That was Sarah Palin, an ad for John McCain, and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. NPR's Nell Greenfield Boyce looked into what studies get singled out and how that affects science.
ABC's Good Morning America recently covered a report from Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma.
The new report on how your tax dollars are being spent, it's going to be
released. It blasted the National Science Foundation, a major government funder of research, saying it wasted money on projects like this.
Researchers figured out how to put shrimp on a treadmill and to get more than $500,000 in the process. Look at them go!
Who studies shrimp on a treadmill? Biologist Lou Burnett. He learned about the senator's report when CNN called him.
I was pretty irritated.
He says the $500,000 was actually for a lot of different research on this economically important seafood species. The treadmills were just a small part of it, a way to measure how shrimp respond to changes in water quality. Burnett says the senator's report was misleading.
And it suggests that much money was spent on seeing how long a shrimp can run on a treadmill, which is totally out of context.
Senator Coburn's spokesperson is John Hart. In an email, Hart said, "Our report never claimed all the money was spent on shrimp on a treadmill. The scientists doth protest too much. Receiving federal funds is a privilege, not a right. If they don't want their funding scrutinized, don't ask." Meanwhile, shrimp on a treadmill is becoming a shorthand for government waste. It's been featured by Forbes in an ad from AARP and a Mike Huckabee commentary.
You know what? I don't care what shrimps do on a treadmill. I don't want my shrimp going to the gym.
This kind of public mockery of scientific studies seems to have a treadmill quality of its own. It follows a pattern that's repeated over and over for decades. Here's how it goes. Find studies that either sound silly or involve foreign countries or have to do with sex. Then link that research to a big wad of government cash. Take this example from last month.
They tried to say that about $9.4 million tax dollars was spent to study men's penis size.
That's Jeffrey Parsons of Hunter College in New York. He's referring to a study that was criticized by a group called the Traditional Values Coalition. Parsons says he and his colleagues did publish a study on men's penis sizes and its link to the risk of sexually transmitted disease, but no tax dollars were used to collect the data. In reality, those millions of dollars went to a government program to train scientists. That program gave a small educational grant to a researcher who happened to write the paper.
And because he credited that funding on the final publication, the Traditional Values Coalition assumed then that all of the funding for that postdoctoral program must have been used to pay for this penis size study.
I called Andrea Lafferty, president of the Traditional Values Coalition, and asked her if she thought putting $9.4 million in association with that study is accurate.
What we said was that there was an allocation of money that went, and we said part of it was used to do this study. We stand by that. They are trying to change the subject. The people that did the study have defended it. They feel it's appropriate to spend taxpayer dollars studying the size of male anatomy. We believe America is broke. People are losing their jobs. They're losing their homes. And this is not an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars.
Her group has also criticized other government-funded studies, including a National Institutes of Health grant for measuring nicotine exposure in toenail clippings.
They used recovery money, money that was meant to more or less stimulate the economy. Interesting use of money, mailing in toenail clippings.
The deputy director of the National Institutes of Health is Lawrence Tabak. He defended the use of recovery funds, and he says the toenail study has an important goal that its critics didn't mention, trying to assess people's risk of lung cancer.
So what's scientifically sound and indeed cost-effective to collect biospecimens for cancer research was twisted in what was intended to ridicule an important life-saving research effort.
Tabak says the NIH reviews research extensively before it's funded. He couldn't think of anything that's ever been defunded because of outside criticism from politicians or political groups. Daniel Greenberg is a journalist who's covered the politics of science for decades. He says ridiculing studies can produce headlines, but not much else.
I don't notice that know, anything has happened to budgets, or that the agencies have, you know, fallen to their knees and said, you know, please forgive us. We think it's terrible.
Still, the attacks do worry officials at those science agencies.
It does reinforce the sense of danger within the scientific community, because they are so dependent on federal money.
The fear of repercussions can also affect individual scientists. In 2003, a lawmaker tried to stop some government-funded sexual health research. A number of scientists had their work reviewed as a result. A survey later found that over half reported feeling nervous or paranoid. Jeff Parsons says people started to be very careful when they wrote grant proposals.
A lot of code words started to get used. We would talk about highly vulnerable youth as a euphemism for lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgendered youth.
And the National Institutes of Health started requiring grants to include a public health relevance statement, a clear statement of the work's benefits. Improving public health is why Parsons says he'll continue to study sexual behavior no matter what, but he says others may get intimidated.
And so I worry about how this type of thing affects people's desire to pursue this line of research as a career.
One scientist says public ridicule never hurt his career. Robert Kraut is at Carnegie Mellon University. He did a study on why bowlers smile. It's now considered groundbreaking research into how people communicate. But in 1980, it got a Golden Fleece Award for wasting tax dollars from the late Democratic Senator William Proxmire. Kraut thinks scientists will always have to deal with this.
Much of the policy debate in Washington, it's all about appearances, and it's easy in sound bites to ridicule without presenting a full story.
Kraut recently was at a conference with some colleagues when they learned they'd been singled out by Senator Coburn's report. Kraut tried to reassure them there'd be no serious consequences, and it's nothing new. Nell Greenfield Boyce, NPR News.
Michael Hogan became president of the University of Illinois at a time when the state was facing a fiscal crisis and many wondered whether the university could remain both competitive and affordable. I'm David Inge. Tonight at 9, I'll talk with Michael Hogan about some of the challenges of his first year and invite your questions on a range of issues, including changes in administration, the effort to streamline operations, and the future of higher education. That's a conversation with Michael Hogan tonight at 9 p.m. on WILL TV, AM, and online.